Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes in caves. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mega Beach in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Good evening, Long Box Legionnaires. This is Josh Shopper coming to you from Milford, Massachusetts. And here with me is Mike Manning as we reintroduce an old episode covering a recent movie release for the Black Panther. Now, Mike, you've already seen the movie. What did you think?
I really like the movie. I think everyone should go see it. It is not your typical superhero fare. It's got a lot more political intrigue than most superhero movies. It doesn't have the generic bad guy cloud thing in the sky raining down evil on the landscape, so that's a good point about it. It's a combination of the McGregor, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and Christopher Priest runs all combined together. So whoever, I know Ryan Coogler wrote the movie, he obviously did a lot of research and did a lot of reading on the Black Panther.
Well, I can't wait to see the movie. And for you folks who have been listening to this for a long time, you might recognize this episode. It's back from 2016, episode 23. Enjoy.
So who's going to give us the background on our favorite African-American superhero?
African-African superhero.
The Black Panther.
I will take care of that. For those of you who don't read comic books as much as the four of us, you probably saw Chadwick Boseman, who was Black Panther in the Captain America Civil War movie.
And he did an excellent job, I want to add.
Did a phenomenal job. He is the Black Panther I hoped he would be. Without giving away any spoilers, let's tell you all about his superpowers. Black Panther does not have quite superpowers, but he does have some. He is the religious and political leader of the Wakandan Nation, which is a made-up country in Africa in the Marvel Universe. And it is the most technologically advanced society in the world. As a result of a comet that crashed there a long time ago that was filled with a unique ore called vibranium. Now, the vibranium is important because Black Panther has it laced into his costume, so it makes him bulletproof. He also has vibranium in his boots, which allow him to jump really high and not hurt himself when he lands. You'll also notice that when he does land, he's silent. That's because the vibranium is absorbing the sound. So he has super strength. Much akin to Steve Rogers. And the reason behind that is part of the ritual to become the Black Panther is to eat an herb that is grown on the mound of vibranium. He has to do this every couple times a year, and it gives him incredible enhanced skills. His agility is increased. His strength is increased. He can lift about 800 pounds or so. And that's why he's a comparable fighter to super soldier steroid guy, Captain America. You also will notice that he's got heightened senses. And the mask that he wears is a ritualistic mask that also hides his identity. But he's also got goggles inside the mask for the technology so he can go to infrared if he needs to, or a bunch of other different types of vision. So that way, no matter what the situation, he's prepared for it. He's also got, in some comics, vibranium daggers or sonic daggers, depending on who's the artist and who's the writer. And in some comics or in some movies, he may have claws that are made out of vibranium, which are very, very, very sharp.
The claws were pretty cool.
So Black Panther was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and appeared in Fantastic Four number 52 in July of 1966. Originally conceived by Jack Kirby to be called the Cole Tiger. Later on, now 1966 was when he appeared, a couple months before the formation of the Black Panther Party. He predates the Black Panther Party and doesn't have anything to do with it. In fact, at one point, Marvel was so scared that he might be considered connected to the Black Panther Party that in Fantastic Four number 119 in 1972, he gets renamed the Black Leopard. And when Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm are over in Wakanda, they're like, "Why are you called the Black Leopard now?" He goes, "Well, I don't want to confuse people by thinking I'm associated with that political party. I have nothing against them, but I do not support them." They just were trying to make Black Panther neutral in the whole Black Panther Party issue. So when you look at the Black Panther, there's essentially five writers who are important in the career of the Black Panther. The Silver Age, the writer is Roy Thomas, and that's his run in the Avengers, because that's primarily where the only place the Black Panther appears in the Silver Age, with the exception of a couple issues in Captain America and Daredevil and the Fantastic Four. Roy Thomas pretty much keeps him in the background of the comic for the most part. He doesn't have a lot of storylines, but they do develop some characters for him. But in 1973, a guy named Don McGregor starts a Black Panther run in the comic book horribly titled Jungle Action. Tom, you've read the Jungle Action. What did you think of it?
I did run that run, and it was a lot of fun to read. I forget some of those confused, but that's the one where he was fighting the Klan a lot. One of the things I noticed right off the bat is that when on the cover, they usually spelled Klan with a C, and they kind of made it a pseudo-organization like the Ku Klux Klan. But inside the comic book, they always used the K. There were a lot of like playing with the Black Panther fighting the Klan, and a lot of the villains. One of note was the Hangman, who would have a noose and would hang his opponents. Was very reminiscent of the African American experience when the KKK was really being running amok in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. So a lot of those comic books are tough to read sometimes. But it's great to have an African superhero, defending, the people. And it's a great run. Everyone should read this one.
Yeah, especially because the first 13 issues of the series called Panther's Rage is considered by most comic historians to be the first Marvel graphic novel. Over the course of most comics back in those days ran maybe one issue or two issues at the most. This spanned 13 issues, and because it was a bi-monthly comic, that's over 2 years worth of comic books to just conclude one storyline, which in itself was an amazing and defined who the Black Panther was. But what I really liked about it is you can pick up any issue, and McGregor is able to give you the backstory of the issues that you've missed in case you haven't been reading the whole run, and you can catch right up to it, which is something they had to do back then because there were no comic book stores and you didn't have pull boxes. You had to go to the spinner rack and hope that your local newsstand had actually ordered the stuff. So after McGregor does the Jungle Action run, he comes back later on and does another run in Marvel Premiere, again, going along with the storyline of the KKK in the Marvel Premiere series. Then we go back to Jack Kirby. From 1977 to 79, there's a 15-issue run of the Black Panther. Kirby does the first 12 issues. If you guys like acid trips, this is the comic for you.
The Space Frog, one of my favorite inventions of all comic book history. The Space Frog takes the Black Panther on a wild trip.
Yeah, he meets up with the collectors, and the frog can transport people from other times into the present or from the past or the future. It's a really LSD trip. That's all I got to say about it. And the artwork is classic Kirby, and it makes you feel like you're having a flashback.
Not that any of us do anything like that flashbacks.
Not that any of us would ever have a flashback like that.
None of us, no sir. Keeping the temple.
Speaking of flashbacks, have you actually seen the concept art for Cole Tiger?
Yes. Is that with like the yellow costume.
He's got the yellow stripe and the big T-belt and, like, the little half cape. It's horrible. It's awful.
So that brings me to the next series. Because next the guy who took over was Christopher Priest. And he did it in the Black Panther, what was their series that they had? The Max issue? Or no, Marvel Knights. Marvel Knights, yes. And this is a phenomenal series. If you're going to read anything by about Black Panther, this is the series to pick up. Christopher Priest, 1998 to 2003. It is phenomenal. And one of the reasons behind it is because he takes all this stuff. At one point in the series, Black Panther is walking through his little Hall of Fame, and there's the Cole Tiger uniform in the in the background, just sitting there like a little Easter egg for all those fans. The best part, I think, of Priest's run is the introduction of a guy named Everett K. Ross. And it's not going to spoil it if you haven't seen Civil War, but he's also in it, played by Martin Freeman. Everett Ross is the POV for a reader to come into the comic book on. All right, he's a smarmy Greek chorus who skewers not just the superhero pantheon of the Black Panther, but all of superheroes in general, pointing out the ridiculousness of the situations that he is constantly put into by hanging around with the Black Panther. I know I overuse this phrase a lot, but I highly recommend that. The next author to take over and do a bunch of runs was Reginald Hudlin, who he was the president of BET at the time he was writing Black Panther. So if you ever have any of you guys seen the Black Panther cartoon that was on BET?
No, I missed it. I saw some of them.
Yeah, it's verbatim his storyline from the Black Panther comics. So Hudlin is has a totally different take on the Black Panther, and he kind of throws out all the past history. It starts completely over with a new slate, which is fine for a writer to do. I just don't like it because I loved how Christopher Priest embraced all the past history and brought it in with him, because I'm a comic historian, and that's what I like. But if you want to get a fresh start on him, you can totally start off by reading the Hudlin stuff. Or if you don't like to read, just go check out the Black Panther cartoon that was on BET. I think I know I watched it on Netflix, so it's available.
It looks
there.
Like it's available on YouTube.
Well, there you go. You can watch it on YouTube.
And there weren't that many episodes, as I recall, 13, 14?
Yeah, it's pretty much the first six issues of the comic book that are retold into an animated format. It's not a traditional animation, too. It's a lot of...
Is it more like a motion comic?
It's more like a motion comic, yes.
I kind of like those. Well, Tommy, why don't you tell us what your favorite run on the Black Panther was?
Well, I decided to talk about the Marvel Comics Civil War, which is different from the Captain America Civil War in theaters right around now. With the Marvel Civil War, Black Panther, since he is not an American, is not required to register. And he's on his honeymoon with Aurora, Storm from the X-Men. And they see what's going on in America, and they kind of decide that they can't really sit on the sidelines. And so they start going and visiting people just to kind of try to keep things from blowing up even worse. They get invited to visit Dr. Doom. They do so and kind of come to the conclusion that he's crazy, but he makes some valid points about the Registration Act. They visit the Inhumans, who also are kind of like, leave us out of this. This is not our fight. And then they meet. Then they go to meet with the President of the United States and are dealt with kind of hostily. And diplomatic tensions start happening between the United States and Wakanda. And Black Panther starts kind of secretly funneling technology and cash to Captain America until the end, where he kind of comes right out and helps physically as well. Civil War is a great story arc, and the Black Panther had a really interesting role in that everybody was looking to him for guidance. He was very well respected as a statesman and as a superhero, and was kind of looked at as somebody who could help bridge the gaps between the two diametrically opposed factions of Captain America and Iron Man. And everybody was kind of hoping that he would broker peace. But Iron Man was a little too unwilling to hear any other side other than his own. And Captain America was very much interested in fighting for what he thought was right.
Huh. All right. Well, Josh, well, what was your favorite run?
Oddly, I'm going to talk about a series of comics that sort of leads up to a Black Panther storyline. It's not necessarily initially about Black Panther. It's called Shadowlands. It's sort of where Daredevil has a few problems that I won't get into. A little bit of demonic possession from the hand. Comes back, just a teeny bit of demonic possession, comes back and starts wreaking havoc in his old neighborhood. It's a pretty big intricate. There's a lot of titles involved. There's, you know, Moon Knight, Power Man, Spider-Man, Elektra, Ghost Rider, the Thunderbolts. It gets pretty involved. It's a pretty dark and desolate storyline that really ends with Daredevil coming, being essentially defeated by sort of like all the street level heroes, and deciding that he is not worthy to be the defender of Hell's Kitchen, and basically asks Black Panther to take that mantle on, to take the streets over for him. It's hard to get through, honestly. There's a lot of sort of sidesteps into other comics. The miniseries itself is, I think, only 5 or 6 issues. But it's a complicated storyline that covers a lot of ground, but eventually leads up to Black Panther taking a larger role over with the street level heroes of Manhattan.
Yeah. So you're saying, I just want to make sure, Daredevil had like, what, 24 or 48 hour, insanity or?
No. This is, you know, he gets demonic possession by the hand from Japan. He comes back. He's in charge of the hand.
He turns the hand loose on the streets of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
To enforce his will.
Well, that sounds terrible.
Isn't there a helpline you can call for, you know, in those cases when you get demonically possessed?
Well, if that's unfortunately that you call somebody to get a hand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we already talked a little bit about some of my favorite ones. I'm looking at Black Panther issue number 19 of Jungle Action. And as I'm saying, in the heart of civilization, T'Challa battles the permanent power of the Klan. In this particular comic book, the Klan, spelled with a C on the cover but a K in the comic book, is shown as being kind of backward, kind of primitive, not that well educated. And T'Challa and his people, his followers, are more enlightened. They're dressed in more modern garb. The Klan is very much seen as backwards and ill-educated. I love that there was a comic book out there that was trying to show kids that the Klan is, you know, is what they are, a terrorist organization of people who are pretty much stuck in the 1940s and 50s. And the 1970s was, you know, a time to start moving forward with race relationships. I still have not – I've talked to a lot of comic book writers, and I still haven't really figured out why the Klan is always – almost always spelled with a C on the covers and almost always with a K on the inside. That's something I really want to try to get a definitive answer on for part of my research. So that's kind of my favorite part of the Black Panther.
I'm guessing it's because they just don't want to put that on the cover for worried about sales. Like, the Black Panther's costume originally was a half mask where you could see that he was black, but then they changed it to the full mask later on. Mm-hmm. I think because they were probably worried that people wouldn't even sell the comic down south if there was a black superhero on the cover. Even later on when in one of the Avengers, when they're telling the secret origin of the Black Panther, or they don't call him the Black Panther on the cover of the Avengers. They call him T'Challa because they were worried about putting Black Panther on the cover of the Avengers because they were afraid people would be thinking it's linked to the Black Panther party.
Exactly. But as a historian, I can't guess. We can't guess. We got to find a little bit of a definitive answer on this. So I'm going to keep looking until I have someone who actually knows on that one. That's my guess also, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying your guess is bad. Your guess and mine line up exactly perfectly. And speaking of the half mask, how many of you guys have read the Blue Marvel series?
I have not.
I have not. I have not.
You know about the Blue Marvel, though.
Yes.
So a very interesting character. He was this is a retcon superhero that was supposedly around in the 1950s, who was known as the Blue Marvel, was as powerful as the DC equivalent of Superman, had a bevy of powers, was very well respected, but with an energy blast, takes some of his mask away, everyone finds out that he's African American, and no one wants a walking WMD with an African American. So they asked the Blue Marvel, JFK asked the Blue Marvel to retire. And it's an excellent storyline. It reminds me a little bit about, you know, the Black Panther and how he was received and some of the things that they, you know, did to kind of minimize the fact that he was African American. Blue Marvel did the exact same thing by wearing a bodysuit that disguised the fact that he was African American. Great read.
Well, if you're interested in the Blue Marvel and the Black Panther, I suggest you pick up The Ultimates, which is going on, a series that's going on now. It stars Black Panther, Blue Marvel, Captain Marvel, the new Giant Man.
Who's the new Giant Man?
He's a Hispanic guy, but I can't remember what his name is offhand. They also have the former Captain Marvel, the one who was made up of light. I think she's called Spectrum or something like that now.
I remember her.
Yeah. So they've got a whole bunch. Oh, and Galactus is a member of the team, too.
Our good friend Justice does a terrific costume of that particular version of Captain Marvel. Just saying. Jay Justice, great cosplayer. She does that particular Captain Marvel really well.
Yeah, and it's a good series if you're interested in it. It's got a cosmic scope to it. It's not kind of my jam. I'm not into the big cosmic scope kind of deals, but if you like that kind of stuff, check out The Ultimates.
All right. That was a great episode from our blast from the past. Mike, any updated plugs for this podcast?
Yeah. If you get a chance, you should really go check out Kirby Crackle. They provide our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com. And in a few days, we're going to be at Pensacon. So you should come check us out Saturday at Pensacon. We're going to be doing three different panels: Stupid Supervillains and Why We Love Them, Last Geek Standing, and a Black Lightning panel where we're going to be interviewing the creators of Black Lightning, Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to Tony. I've been watching these series, and I have a lot of questions for him myself. Should be a great panel.
You should also check out geekorthodox.com. They're going to be at Pensacon with us, and on Thursday night, at 8 o'clock in Pensacola this Thursday night, Eddie and the Whirlpools will be playing at the Back Porch Bar, so you should go check them out too.
Absolutely.
If you're in the East Hampton, Massachusetts area on March 6th, you should also check out friend of the podcast, Scott Bosco, who's going to be doing a comedy show at the Luthiers Co-op. That's March 6th in East Hampton, Massachusetts. And if any member of the Longbox Legion has something that they'd like to promote, go ahead and shoot us an email at luckybastard@thelongboxguys. And don't forget to check out our Patreon page if you'd like to support us financially. It's not actually going for beer. We buy that on our own anyways. It's to help defray the costs of our RSS feed and our website. If you can throw a few bucks our way, great. And if you do listen to if you do subscribe, you will also get a bonus episode each week that we put out a podcast called The GOAT, where we talk about the greatest of all time in some category. And if you want to hear us pontificate on some random category, go ahead and email us again or tweet us at the Longbox Guys. We'll be glad to do it.
I definitely didn't win our first debate. And by that, I mean I did.
You totally did.
And don't we have a Kickstarter to recommend to folks?
Not only do we have a Kickstarter, we have an interview with the creator of that Kickstarter. Let's play that right now. All right, we're here with Kelly Dale. Kelly, why don't you introduce yourself to the Long Box Legion? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, hi, I am Kelly. And, well, what haven't I done? More recently, I was the wife of Jeremy Dale. Some of you guys, some of the listeners out there might actually remember him from a lot of different shows. Jeremy was best known for his work on G.I. Joe and then his creator-owned book, Skyward. If you saw Jeremy at a show, you probably saw me because I was always with him. And what do I do? I'm now a massage therapist, and I fight and train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Wow. So you could kick both our asses, no problem.
Oh, I'll just put you to sleep. A nice choke, and that's all you need.
That sounds relaxing, actually.
Don't worry. If it's a massage therapist, then I'll, you know, actually make you feel even better, because then, you know, I'll rub the knots out of your shoulders.
I'm liking where this is heading already. you've worked in the comic book industry, though, haven't you?
I have. I did a lot of inking, mainly for Jeremy, because for me it was just a hobby, and I knew if I actually started working, then it'd become work. So I did a lot of inks for Jeremy. I also was the editor on Skyward, as well as I was director of marketing for Action Lab for a couple of years there.
Now, Action Lab, probably their most famous comic that they have is Princeless, but they have a number of good titles, including, Skyward.
Well, of course, Skyward.
What other titles did you work on?
Well, in terms of editing, just Skyward.
Just Skyward,
Director of marketing, like, I had my hands on a lot of the stuff, and that was back towards the beginning of Action Lab. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of books now that look amazing, but I never had a chance to work with them.
That's all right. So let's start with your secret origin. How did you get into comic books?
Well, I've always loved comics. But I have to admit, I wasn't a big reader of them. I loved the cartoons, like the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And, of course, He-Man and some of the different 80s cartoons. My little brother had some comics, and so I would read those, and those was Excalibur. And I fell in love with Alan Davis, the artist, of course, of Excalibur. And my little brother also had a bunch of the cards, the different Marvel, different, I remember, those are just Marvel cards.
Yeah, I remember those.
You still, right? Like the old ones?
Yeah, I wasted a lot of money buying packs of those.
My little brother did too, and then I would just sit down and enjoy them. And so I fell in love with the characters reading the back of those cards. And it wasn't until I met Jeremy in college, and he was always an avid comic book reader. So he took me to my first comic shop, which I didn't even know there was a thing called a comic shop. That first time, he was like, you can buy anything you want in here. And so I got an issue of Excalibur and an Adam Hughes Wonder Woman poster. And I was hooked after that.
So was that your first date? Was he brought you to a comic book shop? Because that's so romantic.
It is, isn't it? And yes, that was like the first date.
That's awesome. And you still ended up dating him. See? That's amazing.
Right. Yeah, that's perseverance.
I ended up dating the guy, so not a bad first date.
Yeah. So Jeremy, of course, probably best known for his work on G.I. Joe. I remember his artwork from that. I haven't had a chance to read Skyward, but I'm told it's an all-ages comic.
It is, and you need to read it because it's awesome.
I plan on reading it. I'm a backer for your Kickstarter. So hopefully I'll be able to read the omnibus soon. Now, Can you tell all our listeners about the Kickstarter?
Sure. So in case, listeners, if you don't know, Skyward is, as you guys were saying, an all-ages type of comic. It's an action adventure about a boy and his dog trying to unite the land against the invasion of the Brother Kings. And it's right up your alley if you like things like Legend of Zelda or Lord of the Rings. It's in that same type of fantasy adventure. So I'm doing a Kickstarter omnibus. So if you haven't heard, Jeremy passed away in 2014, very suddenly, and he had just finished issue 9 of Skyward. And he left it on such a cliffhanger. I still have people to this day texting me, emailing me, calling me, what happened? Who is behind the mask? So I decided that for the love of Jeremy, as well as Skyward and the fans, that I would put together an omnibus. So this is going to cover all of the issues, which is issues 1 through 9, plus all the Free Comic Book Day issues, the Halloween Comic Fest issue, any of those type of stories, issue 0. And then I took what he wanted to do for issue 10, because, of course, I'm his wife. I know all of the details. Right. So I took all his plans for issue 10, and I got with Barbara Kessel. I loved her work on Meridian, and she has a similar writing style to Jeremy. So we hashed out how to create the issue 10 based on what Jeremy wanted, plus answering all the questions that we could and kind of ending it in a great way where it's not actually ending it. It's just giving some closure.
So it's closing that chapter, right?
Exactly. So if I decided to do something with Skyward later, I always can. You could tell the story continues, but it gives you closure as a fan for Jeremy's run. And the omnibus covers all those, plus all the variant artists covers that Jeremy had, such as Darwin Cook and Stefan Rue, Phil Noto. And then there's going to be a bunch of like original sketches, original artwork, things never like behind the scenes things as well. It's going to be over like 250 pages.
So people can go on to Kickstarter and search for Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus and find you. Okay. And
yep.
When does the Kickstarter program end?
So I have it set up because, again, this is kind of in my way, final farewell for Jeremy, as well as like hopefully for the fans. To give us closure altogether, the Skyward Omnibus Kickstarter is ending on March 8th. So we have 17 days left. And March 8th is significant because that would have been our 15th wedding anniversary.
You were mentioning Barbara Kessel. I don't know if she mentioned it. Her and I were co-stars on Con Man Season 2.
Oh, were you?
Yes, we were both extras. So I met her. It's not every day somebody gets to meet one of the editors of one of the greatest American novels of all time, Watchmen.
That's true. Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of Barbara Kessel, from her Batgirl stuff in the early days to her Hawk and Dove and everything like that. So I'm very excited to read this. Now, you're not making any money on this Kickstarter. It's all to go to finish the omnibus. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is not a project for any type of profit. I mean, hey, if it goes way above, I mean, I won't say no to profit, of course.
Right.
But the whole purpose of this, I mean, yeah, who wouldn't? But the whole purpose of this, it's not for making money. It's just so we can get the omnibus out. So that way, again, it's for the fans.
Right.
And that's my goal.
And you have to pay not only for the shipping and the printing costs, but you also have to pay everybody who's been working on it with you, right?
Exactly. And what I would like to do, and hopefully I can, you know, raise enough money for this. Because if the money goes over, then I would like to take whatever is extra. And different artists and colorists and letters and people who have worked on Skyward, I would really like for everybody to have, you know, a little compensation from all of this. So if I can, and if we go over that 20,000 goal, then I would like to share the wealth.
Now, you have a whole bunch of artists who are helping you on this project too, finishing that last issue. Could you tell us about them?
Sure. I was going to have it set up because Jeremy always wrote Skyward in like little like episodes. So a single issue, you might have had like three different like little chapters about three different groups of people or something. So I was going to have a couple different artists help me. But with everybody's busy schedules, that wasn't actually an option. Even if they only had a couple pages to draw, it was just way too much. So Shannon Gallant, who you would also know from his G.I. Joe work, graciously drew the entire issue. And issue 10 is a 32-page issue. And he did it all. And, you know, for the love of Skyward, for the love of Jeremy, that man is absolutely amazing. I can't tell you guys enough how awesome he is. But he drew the entire issue, and it's at the colorist right now, and the letters are being done by Tom Zoller from Loving Capes, and some of the, you might also know some of this stuff from My Little Pony. But
I know him from Love and Capes, but I have interviewed him before.
Okay.
Big fan of Love and Capes. My niece is a big fan of his on My Little Pony.
Well, have you read his new one, the Warning Label?
No, I haven't read that yet.
Okay, it's an online comic. Oh my goodness, it's great. It's very well written. It's very a Tom Zoller book. So you definitely want to read that too.
I'm writing it down
now. But Tom's doing the letters. Tom's doing the letters for Skyward issue 10, and the colors are being done by Catherine Leno and Laura Martin.
What's the Kickstarter at now, and how long do you have to go for the goal line?
Gotcha. So at this moment, at 9:18 p.m. on Monday, February 19th, we are at 17,770, and that's 253 backers, and we have now it's 16 days left to go. Pretty good.
Yeah, this seems like a labor of love for you, and so we really appreciate you coming on, taking the time out of your schedule to come promote your Kickstarter campaign. We hope that all the members of the Long Box Legion will jump onto this Kickstarter and support you. Again, we get asked all the time about good all-ages comics, and so this will be a great one for people to have. Do you have any final words for the Long Box Legion out there?
I think the only thing I've left to say, check out Skyward. It's a fabulous, fabulous all-ages book. But even if you decide not to, just keep reading comics.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Well, that was great. I can't wait to see more about that. There's a ton of options on that Kickstarter, including a lot of original artwork. I hope everybody reaches out and helps Kelly Dale out, and that all looks amazing.
Yeah, I think the best part about it is she's not trying to make a profit on that. She's just trying to get her husband's dreams fulfilled. So good luck to her on that Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
Anything for you to plug?
Well, I, of course, have my Friendly Neighborhood Comics. That place is still cleaning up. They're still getting into the new space, but eventually it's going to be back to its good old self. But head down to Friendly Neighborhood Comics. Come see us at Pensacon. And listen to our music and listen to our podcast. I hope you enjoyed the rebroadcast of our original Black Panther.
And remember what Tom always says when he's here. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love.
Yeah, then, now if he could follow his own rules, I think that would be, that'd be a brilliant first step.
Yeah, he does not. He's horrible. He's a horrible human being.
So a terrible human being. I love him to death.
All right. Goodbye from the Long Box, guys.
Love you guys. Good night. We melt the highway miles away like sunfire. No stopping tonight. A double double, the only thing that could break our stride. Vulture one blast and we're rocking the cruise. With dark night we're flying with nothing to lose. The wind whipping by like a banshee scream. The taillights are dragging like Omega Beam. We're on the road, we're going home. To the place where wild nerds roam. With pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. Oh, no, no, it's totally cool, man. Here, let me help you out. He does that. Oh, I should have received an Oscar. Yeah, it's a good movie.